I'm opening?
We have an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity.
Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Perfect.
Uh-huh. Great opening, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, with that, welcome to John Wick, what quite possibly may be the funnest movie of 2014.
If by funnest, least, you mean funniest.
They really?
Equally.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians, huh?
Yeah, that's exactly where my mind went.
Okay, Guardians of the Galaxy was, yes, a fun movie, but this was a cult fun movie. This was... I don't know how to describe the difference between this and Guardians of the Galaxy, but this was fun.
I'm going to try and help you, because I don't want you to dig yourself into
it. That is the voice of Sarah Stretton already disagreeing. We have Dimitri Panos.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
And, of course, Roxy Stryer.
Just because I want to save you from digging yourself into a hole, I think that what we could say...
I stand by my convictions.
...is that how Guardians of the Galaxy brought a fun sense of humor to the superhero movie... that John Wick brought a fun sense of humor to the action thriller.
It's outrageous to compare these two movies. It is completely outrageous. I don't know why we started with that, but it's outrageous. You can't compare them.
I'm trying to help.
I didn't make the comparison. I just said this was an amazing movie.
You get what I'm saying?
I see what you're doing.
And the interpretive dance starts now.
Yes, prior to this, I know we're going, prior to this we were talking, and Roxy said she thought this was one of the funniest movies she's seen this year, that she could interpretive dance the movie for us. So I said, you should do that while we're doing the podcast, and I guarantee 5 million hits. It'll go viral.
I really do feel as if I could have. And that is not me saying I dislike the movie. I actually really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was fabulous. It was so funny. It was totally fabulous. I was sitting there. I actually got to see it with Sarah, and she can attest to the fact that I was laughing out loud many times. I don't know if that was the intention of the film, but I thought it was just really funny.
But you clearly liked the music,
yeah.
If you're willing to dance to it.
I did. I noticed the soundtrack the entire way through. Can't say whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I enjoyed it.
I love the soundtrack. Absolutely. I think it fit well. They picked great music.
Yeah, and well, we'll talk a little bit later, because there was one scene where I felt that the soundtrack went a little overboard. But
trying to make you feel something.
Well, yeah, I mean, okay. Well, I guess I'll just cover it now. Number one, I thought that the movie, it was an efficient action movie. I felt it was in the vein of a Taken. I didn't think it was as good as, but it was definitely as efficient as Taken was. And as I was watching it, I was like going, geez, I didn't see... Luc Besson's name in this, because it reminded me of a good Luc Besson film. But then I was thinking, well, geez, if his name was on this, it probably would have been crap. But, you know, his latest movies haven't been all that great since, like, Taken. But this one I felt was good, and it moved quickly.
There wasn't enough gunfire, you know?
You're funny. And well, I was thinking, like, wow, like, David Ayer must love this movie, because, like, every time Keanu's character John Wick took somebody out, it was two to the chest, one of the face. Mm-hmm. Two to the chest, one of the face. I mean, there were more headshots in this movie. The only thing that was missing that John Ayer would have put in was the, you know, exploding cantaloupe. But it moved fast. It was quick. And it was in and out. I enjoyed it. I had a good time with it. And when it was over, I was like, okay, that was fun.
It didn't try to be anything that it shouldn't have been. This plot, very simple.
Guy
gets out.
Almost
and gets sucked back in.
There was not much of a B story. Sorry, you could have told it in probably like 20 minutes if you wanted to.
Yeah,
in interpretive form.
But the beauty was in how just John Wick absolutely demolishes everything in his path.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, he was great. I mean, and this is part of the reason, if we have a good setup and we have like a decent character that we're going to go behind, like it's great. that we can believe that somebody, that one man can take down like an army the way he did.
Yeah,
and
he can.
Like, you sort of kind of wish that, yeah, I wish I could do that too.
He can, except for when he can't, which is when it matters most, which is the biggest plot hole, in my opinion, of the entire movie, where he gets the crap kicked out of him and his dog's killed under his own nose in his house.
You know.
Yes, I understand he was, like, knocked out and whatever, but if this is the all-powerful John Wick, get up and do
no,
something.
But here's the thing. If we're talking story structure, which is a good place to start, take Unforgiven.
Okay.
Oscar winner.
Right.
Now, the whole point, have you, it's a Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, no, I've seen Unforgiven.
Okay. For those of you who haven't, it's all about a guy who doesn't want to go back in.
Right.
And he's like, you know, I'm a changed man. I don't do that stuff. I don't drink, blah, blah. And everyone around him tells him, oh, dude, you used to kill women and children. You did this. And it's structurally, that type of character has to get beat up. Now, in Unforgiven, it just happened to happen way later. In this one, it happens pretty early.
It happens, you know, up front, yeah.
Absolutely. I'm not saying that at no point could he have been beaten up. I think later on in the movie, when he does get beaten up, when he does get bagged and he's sitting there and he got hit by the car, all those things, totally fine. But just our first impression of him is that he can't handle himself because he gets... He's on the floor in a second.
I'll just say it was completely surprised.
Yeah, it's not like he was going into every other one. He knew the job he was getting into. He was prepared mentally, physically, whatever. And it's in his house in the middle of the night, and he really just wasn't expecting. He's been out for years. You weren't expecting someone to club you over the head with something.
Yeah, I don't think he was expecting, like, these gas station guys to find him.
Of course he wasn't expecting it, but that doesn't mean once he's down and he sees that his dog is getting kicked and kicked that he can't John Wick himself up and go and kick the crap out of some people.
John Wick himself up. I like that. You're very punny. That was nice. I don't know.
That didn't bother me.
In this kind of a movie, I sort of kind of, like, will forgive that. I mean...
Yeah. It didn't bother me because this was a comedy, so I got over it, but I think it was a comedy.
I agree with Roxy on this. I totally, like, I started looking. Like, I was looking on Rotten Tomatoes. I was looking on the IMDb page where it would say, like, action thriller. I was just waiting for one of them to say slash comedy. I wanted it to be there.
Maybe dark comedy.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, I didn't find it as a comedy. I did take it like a Taken kind of a movie because, you know, in Taken, you also have a guy who has, he's not in that game anymore, but because they take his daughter, he has to come back and he has a certain set of skills that he's going to use against these people. And in this one, you know, John Wick has a certain set of skills and he comes back. And, you know, my only, if I'm going to be nitpicky on this movie, it was like he wasn't with the dog long enough. Like, he was with the dog for, like, not even 48
hours.
What
the dog represents.
I get it. You know what? And again,
here's why I think that switch from it became enjoyable because the first 10 minutes up until the point that he becomes John Wick, the John Wick, we're going through his life and we're left with a lot of questions, right? Not much is answered. We know that his wife died. We know it's tragically and whatever else, and we see the scene in the gas station and all that, but we don't know much about him. And then that switch happens, and now all of a sudden we're like, this guy that we thought was a good citizen is just an absolute monster, and that I can understand that being comedic.
Well, can I say what my favorite part of the movie was? And it wasn't even an action scene. To me, my favorite part of the movie because, A, it was so efficient, so economically done, and it said everything without even really dialogue. It's the scene where the head of the Russian mobs calls him up. And this is after the confrontation where John Wick punches him in the face, punches his son in the face.
Vigo.
And he calls up John Leguizamo. It was a scene where John Leguizamo is like, get out of my lot, and he punches him in the face, and John Leguizamo is the front, and he, what do you call those people who take in stolen cars and strip them for parts?
It's called a chop shop.
A chop shop, yeah. He has like the chop shop. He runs the chop shop for these folks. And John Leguizamo punches our mobster's son in the face. The mobster, the head Russian mobster, calls up John Leguizamo and goes, so I understand you punched my son in the face. Explain. And he goes, well, your son stole... He goes, he stole a car and killed the dog of John Wick. And all the guy says is, oh.
Which is, had me in tears laughing.
And he shuts the phone. Number one, he had a communicator phone. It was a clamshell phone, which was awesome because I guess technology hasn't reached Russia yet. But that's okay. And so he shuts the phone and all he says is, oh. And in that one moment, that's all you need. You understand how badass John Wick is.
And they had multiple moments like that that I thought were very strong for the film. Adding on to yours, then you get like the follow-up scene where then Viggo calls John Wick.
Right.
And has to, and then he's not saying anything. And he goes, he said enough.
Yeah.
You get silence is deafening.
Yeah. Just all those things added. And on top of that, I thought it was interesting that they twisted the beginning. Because through the advertising, I think everyone knew that this was Keanu Reeves' big action movie. We all knew he was going to come out as a powerhouse. I was expecting to start up with, like, the killing of the dog. I wasn't expecting to get any of the wife's story or to have the opening scene of him being injured.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So all that really threw me off. Like, I thought I was going to know the first 5 minutes of this film.
Mm-hmm.
And then it had me confused because I was like, is this about his wife? Did they kill his wife? I thought it was going to be a revenge film to that. And so they totally had me off what the track that I thought it was on.
Right.
Yes. So, and I loved that because it is, we expect someone to go and avenge their wife.
Yeah.
And we don't expect them to be just grieving and be completely separate from this world.
Right.
And then them to be brought in just by strange coincidence.
Yeah. And it seems in this day and age too, it seems that the B action film is the way to try to rejuvenate someone's career. Look what it did for Liam Neeson. Just recently we had Pierce Brosnan in November Man. There was another, Kevin Costner tried it out in 3 Days to Kill. It's like, let's try to, you know, get these older people or something. And in fact, John Wick was meant to be for an older actor. The original script called for somebody to be 65 to 70 years old, which I thought it would have been interesting had they gone that route. But then
I think it's better how it turned out, especially John Wick being closer in age to, Isof? I can't pronounce that correct.
I-O-S-E-F.
Viggo's son. Him being kind of in the middle of their ages,
right,
in between Viggo and the son, I thought suited me really well. I didn't really want to see someone more in Viggo's age bracket fighting everyone story.
You know, Keanu Reeves is like 50.
Okay.
Like, and I'm not saying that as a joke. He's like 50 years old, so he looks younger. He looks good for his age.
I think he looks awesome. Yeah. I think he looks great. Here's the deal with me and Keanu Reeves. So I think I've had a very soft spot for him since Hardball. It's the first movie that I ever cried in. I think he is very talented. He gets a lot of slack. He gets a lot of slack for having no emotion on screen. I think that's really unfair. People always say that he's very untalented actor. I thought he was great in this. I thought that he really held his own. I'm not saying this was an Oscar-worthy performance, but people who were like, oh, will he be able to admit the emotion or whatever it is? Yeah, I think that he totally was exactly what
I think he's a really good physical actor. I think that's why I like him in The Matrix so much. It's just, he's a really good physical actor. I like to see him in action.
And he can do comedy too. I agree. I don't have the same problem as a lot of people do with Keanu, but, you know, and this, for what this movie was, he was fine.
I see him as John Wick. And by the way, the remnants of Neo, they're not there for me. So they're completely separate. It's great.
The fighting.
But I'm not like, ooh, here's Neo from The Matrix in a different movie. It's John Wick.
Because
everything else around it is contextualized to be like, oh my God, John Wick, not Neo, the one.
And there's been enough years separating the two.
And the fighting style's different. And
the type of movie, of course.
But for me, you know what you're going to get out of Keanu Reeves. So if that's the role that you're looking for, cast Keanu Reeves.
Which I felt like this was.
Yeah.
No, and again, the director and the producer, like the two gentlemen who directed the movie, They felt that he was perfect for the role. And
they've known him for years.
Yeah, they've known him since The Matrix and such. And, you know, they were stunt coordinators. And, in fact, they weren't even slated to direct the movie.
Right, one was producing, one was...
Well, that's only because they both directed.
Mm-hmm.
There's some DGA ruling that's...
That they had to give it to one and not the other. And that's happened in the past. Like, Eurotrip had three directors, so they just gave it to one.
Right, I think it was very obvious, though, that the people directing this movie, it was so action-based that it was clear who the kind of style the directors had
and their experience.
But again, we've seen we've had great example, both good and bad, of where a person who wasn't a director but had worked either as a cinematographer, stunt, or whatever, production designer, editor, and they've gone on to direct, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. In this experiment, I think they did a really good job.
I mean, it worked.
They fought for the job. They were called in as stunt coordinators, but instead they said, you know what, we really want to direct, and apparently they spent a week mapping out and even doing animatics for the producer and say, this is how we envision the movie. And when they showed it to him, they said, you know what, you guys have exactly what we're looking for in this. And I think I think the action in it was great.
It's mostly
much better than Oliver Megaton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't overcut. Yeah, I got to see some action. It was fine.
Sounds
good.
You have to see a little more than some.
And that's what I'm saying. There's so much action in this that, you know what, even if they're directing and they need help on certain emotional and dialogue scenes, you can get someone to step in and help them with that because there's so little of it.
Absolutely.
And Sarah?
I just have to say that I think that, sure, that this was kind of like their debut directing, but they've done not only tons of stunt work, they've also done a ton of second unit work. Like, this wasn't completely new for them, and they're working with actors who they know for years.
Yeah.
They had a really solid team in between the two of them. I don't think this was them reaching. I think they had a very clear vision of what they wanted. They had, I think, beautifully choreographed action scenes and did each action scene and just, like, the still scenes really well.
And I agree.
They
killed it with location, too.
Well, New York was a very important part of their, you know, of their palette. They used New York perfectly, and they showed us parts of the city.
We had some cool aerial shots,
absolutely, and some nighttime shots, and where that hotel was. You know, it was New York, but it looked different. Mm-hmm. And I thought that they filmed it, but they used it as a character itself. So
yeah, and it was, you know, it wasn't even for like a mob movie. It was not a typical New York mob movie. It was like, I mean, the rules of that hotel just in general
were
great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
The gold coins,
mm-hmm.
the gold coins that they never truly explained. They kind of let it carry through the movie from him opening after he's broken through the cement floor and you see the gold coins in his gun chest.
Right.
And it kind of, they keep reappearing slowly but surely through the whole thing, but they're never fully identified.
I thought it was really cool because we see that John Wick has them, then we see that Viggo has them in his thing, and then when we see him use it at the hotel and then to get into the, mm-hmm. like, nightclub-y kind of thing, and then when he asks somebody to babysit Miss Perkins, I don't remember the name of the guy who he asked to babysit, but he says, I'll give you a coin if you're low on coins. So I started realizing, you know, obviously these are something they exchange with, it's important, whatever it is. I didn't need Everest to sit down and be like, here is the purpose of this gold coin.
It seemed pretty, again, the movie was so efficient that you didn't have to make a wild leap to figure out the coins are currency in this
world.
And I don't know how they get their coin. Didn't matter. This is what they used to get in. This is what they used. Like, they put it in the slot. They probably use it for the toilets, too, for all I know.
I don't know, because it seems like it's one coin is extremely valuable. So the fact that John Wick has so many in the beginning, I think you don't understand at first how important that is. But then once you're three quarters of the film, it's like a reminder. Oh, in the beginning, he had a ton.
I look at them as stripes. Like, you're earning your stripes, but actually you're earning your coin. So every time every time you did something, you earned a coin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And regarding New York, too, you know, they wanted to take a little pseudo-gothic, old-style New York. That's the way they wanted to approach it and film it. And I think they did. I mean, they did make New York look just a little bit different to us, so that it was almost in a different world. Mm-hmm. But it was New York City, and it fit the world of John Wick.
And it almost reminded me of Neil Gaiman, because he has an ability to kind of transcend that. What's the one about, like, the underbelly of London, Underworld, or something it's called? But regardless, I digress.
No, I know what you're saying.
It's that sensibility.
I remember, I thought that it looked very different, too. You could tell New York at a certain point, but I remember early on thinking, huh, this looks a little more old world, like, is this Boston? And then I was like, oh, no, we're clearly in New York. It hit me, but it did seem different. And it is so easy to make New York typical, because everybody does it.
Right.
That I thought that was cool.
And in a romantic comedy, you want that scene in Central Park.
Right.
Like, you know, they made it work for their use in this kind of a hyper-realistic action movie. They made it just a little bit different so that it wasn't boring. You know, they used New York and treated it like a character almost in the way in which they filmed and shot it. Listen, I thought they were very capable as directors. I'd be curious to see what they do outside of like John Wick, you know, other projects they get. You know, I was thinking about the two gentlemen who directed Captain America: Winter Soldier, which I think was the Russo brothers. Am I wrong on that?
Yes.
And like, okay, so here's another pair, and what they do, I think I love what they do. I think what they did with Captain America, I'm not sure that these gentlemen are on that same page just yet. But John Wick, again, it was such an efficient action movie. It never overstayed its welcome for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whatever tiny subplots, like, oh, he wasn't with the dog long enough, I'm willing to forgive.
What they didn't, there wasn't a ton of, like, B-storyline or subplots, but what they did give me in replace of that was a world that was very interesting. Like, we talked about the coins, we talked about, if we look at the hotel that they all stay in, that's a whole nother life. If you bring in kind of this John Wick's relationship with these other assassins from his past life, all that is very, very interesting and always was adding something new for me to think about. The rules of the club, where they were all going.
Right.
And it was never something completely dived into. They didn't talk about the history.
No.
It was just this world that existed
that
we kind of got to get little glimpses of as we were getting propelled through all these action scenes.
Yeah.
That were wonderful.
And tell me if you agree with me on this as well. I think another thing is that they let the action breathe. It wasn't overly cut. There wasn't shaky cam. We weren't getting, like, multiple angles. Like, they let the action breathe and play out so that we can actually see him taking people out.
I definitely agree with you. I think they might have let it breathe a little too much at times for me.
Really?
I did.
It was old school for me.
I found myself looking at my phone for the time many, many times.
Really?
And this was only a 100-minute movie. So that was unfortunate for me because...
Are you talking about in the individual action scenes themselves or the whole course of the film?
The action scenes. And it was a bummer.
Crazy.
That was a bummer for me. But I just thought that there was so much of the same style of killing.
Oh.
It's the same way for me for, like, any sort of comic book movie. If we have one comic book character who is always using his special powers in the exact same way, I get bored with it. And I felt like what you said, Dimitri, earlier, to the chest, one to the head, to the chest, one to the head, gun, 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 gun. And for me, it was just like, missed the mark a little bit, breathed a little too much. But some of the beginning scenes, I was so glued. And then as we went on for the action scenes, I was like, all right, I saw this.
See, and I loved it. I completely disagree. I think that it's when you're a trained killer, like, you have your shots that you need to take, and you take them over and over again. And it's about making all of his movements were so fluid from one kill to the next to the concentration on how many people he was killing at once or when someone was vulnerable, who he needed to target first, I thought was really well done. And just, like, to me, it mentally made sense. Like, each fight scene, like, I could see why he was surviving.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so calculated, and I loved how long they would stick on it and just let it all happen. They weren't doing a bunch of cuts, and it was steady, and it was fluid.
I thought
that each action scene, I felt like it was new.
Oh, no, I didn't feel that way at all.
It utilized two aspects, I believe. One was, again, as we talked about location part of it, right? Most of his adversaries were not aware of their full surroundings, and that's what John Wick a lot of times used to an advantage, right? We see a lot of corner stuff, we see, you know, and whatever else, and so he was very aware of how to use his location to his advantage. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason why you have these longer scenes, and to me, I actually like that style. I think most movies now are overcut to such a point that I'm like, I tune out because I'm like, you know what, I know he's going to get away, I can't tell one from the other anymore.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But knowing that Keanu obviously has had so much intense training with the Matrix, this guy can do it.
Yeah,
so let's
let him
be on screen to show off,
because
he will.
My problem wasn't with him. It wasn't with him at all. I thought that he did it really, really well, and he was believable and awesome. And you're right, the locations did help, and that we were changing spots. We went from the house, and then we had the bath scene and all of those things. It helped, and it wasn't with the that I wanted more cuts. It's that I wanted it to be shorter.
Interesting, because for me, it never overstayed its welcome. It didn't get boring, and yes, I mean, I mean, it just seemed finally there was a character. Although I guess you can make the maybe not finally, because Liam Neeson's character, you know, he would take you out like was it done. And John Wick's character was like, he made sure that you're not getting back up to fight him again. He made sure with efficiency and smooth movement and motion that whoever he was fighting, that guy was not going to get back up and stab him in the back.
It was just so skilled, and like you weren't worried about who was going to be. And also there was awareness of there was never like, I'm not going to kill any innocent people. He just didn't.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't.
No, he did. When he goes through the club, that was one of my other issues. When he was going through the club and he just starts shooting something.
He didn't kill any innocent people.
Yes, he did. He shot like four people.
Yeah, they were all in suits. They were all part of the bodyguard.
Yeah, I didn't
because
think that
they were in a suit.
You could like tell they all had.
Yeah, they were bodyguards.
Are you guys serious? I was so maybe I missed. I mean, I just disagree. I didn't think that was clear at all.
I totally did. Totally bad guys
because well, there were zeroing
about when he's
on
him. I'm talking about when he's on the dance floor. There was like people dancing, and he shot this one person in the leg.
No, it was the guy who was coming towards him.
No, not the guy in the leg. It's the person facing the other way, back towards him, not facing him. Shot him in the leg. And I was like, what the hell? Absolutely. I mean, I guess maybe that was a bodyguard. I'll go back and watch, but I really don't think so. I just felt like at that point he didn't give a shit who was shooting.
Well, again,
I completely read that scene differently, where I was like very aware as he was going through. I was like, he's so conscious that it was who he was targeting. Huh. And like I remember as the scene was going very clearly that it was always him cutting through the crowds, but only hitting his targets.
I mean, I believe that too. But even if Roxy is correct, it just goes back to the. And I'm going to reference Unforgiven. You know, there was that one portion where the adversary says to Clint Eastwood's character, like, "You just shot an unarmed man." Well, he should have armed himself.
Should have armed himself.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
But people in the club that should have armed themselves. I mean, I don't know. I just disagree. And regardless of whether it's true or not,
but they're
the
in
fact
that under
it wasn't clear to me is probably it's an issue, obviously. I mean, it's not with you guys, so.
Yeah,
not.
I didn't think that he was taking out any innocents. I thought everybody that. I agree with you. I felt that he went in, and anybody that was coming towards him was
I remember thinking how strange that was, how weird it was that he didn't care. And some of these people, I don't know, I just felt like they were people who worked at the club, maybe people who
is like owned. The way I read it is like it was very clear that the whole club was heavily guarded. They knew he was coming. They had people on the everyone was already looking for John Wick, so they just had force after force after force there. And it's obviously under Viggo's control because that's where his son parties.
Yeah.
Where they party.
Workers.
So it's like, and you get that from the very beginning when he goes to the doorman and he's like, I know who you are. Like, take the night off. And he's like, thank you. And it's because everyone working there.
Yeah, but
even
for
Viggo.
Even the front with the priest, I felt like, the priest is working and it's a front, but how many people has that priest killed? I probably don't think any. Like,
oh, I was totally on the spot.
I just wasn't. I felt like he was killing innocents.
I'm gonna use the clerks Return of the Jedi argument on that. If you're a contractor and you're working on building the Death Star, you know who you're working for, and you could.
And the priest
at any
like
time,
curses at him, and like
I liked how he took that priest out. I didn't find that priest to be holy. We're gonna argue about this all day,
and
that's the point though. Like, I'm not arguing. I love you guys as humans. I just disagree about the movie.
That's arguer.
It's true.
Where's your interpretive dance? We can use that right now.
I know. And it sounds like, because I am on the defense about a lot of this stuff, that I didn't enjoy the movie, and I really enjoyed the movie.
As a comedy.
Yeah. What Sarah was talking about, what I wanted to address was what Sarah was talking about earlier about the actual universe. I thought that was so cool. It was unlike something like Equalizer that we saw earlier, where, no, I'm not a prostitute, but I felt like I could relate a little more to the universe that we were in, that we were seeing, and the world. This was a world that I was like, what's going on? Like, this is some underground weird ass scene that I have never seen before. That they're like exchanging this currency and they're in this club and I can't go in.
The Assassin's Hotel.
I thought that was really cool. And and even the guy at the hotel, the concierge, he was so interesting. I thought he was
awesome. Lance Reddick. Lance Reddick. I love him.
I loved him. I thought that was so cool. And all these rules, and I was like, wow, they're really setting out the guidelines. I thought that was great.
And I liked Ian McShane.
Yeah.
You know, he was in the movie, short briefly. You know, it was, again, I like the Assassin's Coda, you know, at
they used elements well, like even the cleanup crew.
Right. Yeah. I'm calling for dinner reservations. Will you need a reservation? I don't know yet.
Yeah. I loved that. I thought that was really cool.
That's in terms of elements of comedy, they knew how to hit certain beats to
comedy. I love that we started talking
about
that.
Well, no, but they know how to leverage what they have.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I agree, and
bring it back. You know, if you're going to have something, why just have the cleanup crew at the beginning? Use them throughout, you know, and make a point of it.
Thought they did a great job.
Yeah, I also like
moments.
I also like the scene with the cop who came to his door.
That was hysterical.
See,
too.
I thought that was funny.
I thought he was screwed.
Yeah,
I just
like they. You're back to work? No, no. He goes, sort of. He goes, good night, John.
Yeah,
and he's like, I'm going to leave. It's like everybody knows. If there were spies, like. Everybody knows who they are. Mm-hmm. So even the cops know that John Wick was an assassin for...
Well, he doesn't want to mess with him.
Yeah, no. And he's like, okay, John, good night.
And he looks in. There's like a bunch of dead people on the floor. Totally fine.
You're back to work?
I thought that was awesome. Like, I thought that there were so many moments like that were really, really funny. But going back to what you were talking about, the oh moment, we got another one of those when finally Viggo goes to tell his son who John Wick was, and he's like, he's the person you send to kill the boogeyman. And the son, whose name I can't pronounce, just goes, oh, the exact same reaction his father had. I was like father, like son.
What did you guys think of just in general, right? Speaking of the boogeyman, I'm reminded the translations.
Yes,
this is the most interesting way of translating.
Oh, are you talking about the...
He's talking about the colored italicized.
On-screen translations, because when you have subtitles...
I really didn't like that. I really didn't like it. It bothered me many, many times. There were some times where I felt like nothing was needed. Like they were translating too many things that I didn't need to know. And at least they introduced it very early on, so I knew it was coming throughout the film, but I don't know. Just aesthetically, it wasn't pleasing to me.
Really? For me, it just lent a graphic novel.
Because it started with the song. It started with him singing about the boogeyman.
Right.
Right, and it's like next to his face, the words.
Well, it was the way that they either highlighted certain words or made them caps and colored it.
And what color they used between the blue and the red.
Like I said, for me, it reminded me of comic book bubbles or comic book captions. And so to me, it just lent to this graphic novel look and feel to what this movie, and I neglected to say that earlier, but yet the world in which it created for me was a graphic novel kind of an approach, and it was almost framed like a comic book at certain times as well, like from panel shots to panel shots. And again, I just think that goes back to, you know, a comic book has panels to let its action play out. In this movie, it didn't quick cut, so it literally did make like a panel here, and then he's going to walk to the bathhouse, and I don't know. I appreciated the way that the movie was filmed in sort of kind of an old school kind of way.
Sure.
And I'm kind of in the middle of the two, where at first, the first thought it reminded me of was this kind of looks like your opening credits, where you have people's names flashed across. And I, so I, at first I was like, because it was like, The Boogeyman. And so it just felt like an intro, a title card, an, like, actor's name. So at first I was like, huh, that's a little strange. So I was thrown off. And then when I was like, when my mind switched, and I was like, you know what this actually reminds me of? A comic. A, it's sort of, then I got into it. But mentally,
It took you a while.
It took me like a couple times for me to be like, that's what that should remind me of instead of the opening credits.
I can appreciate it because I'm so tired a lot of times, and especially if there's no like backdrop against the subtitles, half the time if it's, especially if it's white against white, I just be conscious that you're doing this and that you're putting subtitles against something that's very hard to read. Right. So I can at least appreciate the effort that subtitles do not have to be boring to begin with.
I agree with that, but I do have to say every single time I was pulled out of the movie. Every single time.
Interesting.
So it was a bummer for me because it happened a lot. And I, of course, subtitles are done very poorly in 99% of movies. I think that they just really don't do a great job with them. But that doesn't mean that this was the right way to do it because sometimes they do it the wrong way.
I just thought in this movie it was just done to effect. I didn't think... I didn't think I was watching an artsy-fartsy movie because it was subtitled. I just thought it was done to effect for this particular world that, these folks had created for us. It didn't bother me. I mean, it was fine.
I can also respect the fact that sometimes, you know what, when you make a movie, make a decision. And if you're going to stand by that, some people will like it, other people will not like it. But at least be true. You know, it seems as we've kind of given examples of this throughout this entire thing, they knew what they wanted. It may not be what everybody wanted, but they wanted that.
I definitely think they made some strong choices. I disagreed with some of them. Some of them I agreed with. And some of them I think I interpreted differently than they wanted me to. I appreciate when somebody does make decisions like this.
Right.
This one didn't work for me.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, this whole movie, too, I mean, was done not in your traditional... Not necessarily in your traditional way that a movie was done as well. So, I mean, this was basically a lot of... it was done like an independent, like the kind of independent movies they've been doing like 10 years ago, where...
I mean, it reminds Boondock Saints. There's reminiscence of that.
Oh, I didn't think of...
No, I didn't think of... Well, I was just thinking on this, in the terms of how they financed the movie, Basil Iwanek... I think is, I don't know if I'm pronouncing, he's one of the producers of the film. And basically it was Lionsgate International. Mm-hmm. Lionsgate International had picked up the movie and they sold the, they basically sold the foreign rights. Now, that's not necessarily uncommon, where somebody will package a movie, sell the foreign rights. That way you get that money in and you can put that into your budget and help you market the movie for domestic. What was interesting to me, was the fact that they sold the movie foreign rights. They didn't have a domestic deal until 3 months prior to the release date. And for me personally, I thought that the release date, I thought had they saved this movie for like right after the holidays, like mid-January going into February, the movie could have been like number one. Like, to release it in October, and it did fine. It did about $14 million all in opening weekend. Came in number two behind Ouija, which was a horror movie in October that was PG-13.
That was awful.
So,
sorry.
And, well, I'm just saying, like...
I just think that there are so many movies people are seeing right now. I know there's so many different things. People are obsessed with Whiplash. They're obsessed with Birdman.
I think we're talking different audiences.
We're talking different audiences. I'm just saying that people are going to the movies right now.
That's the point. It is a
time that people are going. People are obsessed with things.
People are going, but the box office numbers are not nearly as high as if you're looking at movies that are banking in... What was it? April. Like, our top box office movies are getting opening to... 17 million.
No,
which
we had opening weekend, we had a couple 36 mils coming in. With
not
Equalizer,
a lot for the past...
Equalizer.
But not in comparison to months like April or like when you're bringing in like...
By the way, you guys should go to Box Office Breakdown and watch Sarah Stratton, where she breaks down, and JTE break down the numbers.
She's in the booth right now.
She is the expert. They know best.
Box Office.
Shameless plug.
Well, Box Office, though, has been down this entire year. I think what's been happening is, after coming off of a soft summer, I mentioned this last week when we were talking about rated R adult movies. Here's another rated R action movie that came out. And I mean, $14 million, it's not making any ripples at the box office, but it means that there is still an audience. Look what Gone Girl has done, and will more than likely continue to do so. Mm-hmm. But now we're getting into November, December.
That's different, though, movies are coming in. Because of a book.
Equalizer. I mean, you know, so there have been a lot of rated R movies that have come out that are doing relatively well. I just think that John Wick, again, it reminded me of a movie that would come out in January where the competition wouldn't be so much. And then they could have given it a little more time for marketing, because I'll be honest with you, a friend of mine, like maybe a week and a half ago, said, oh, I really want to see that John Wick. And I'm like, who the hell's John Wick?
That's what I was saying about the other movies. I'm not saying it's the same audience, but for me, it got a little lost because there are so many other things that I'm hyped for that people have been hyping about that I was, when we were talking about doing John Wick, I was like, oh, I think I heard it. You know, I haven't really talked to that many people who are like, this has been on my radar for a really long time. I've been waiting for this movie so bad. I just haven't talked to that many people about it. I will say, though, that in true form, the trailer to me had me cracking up, man. It sounded like this guy who was a little pissed his dog died, and so he was going to kill everybody.
Yeah.
That's really what the trailer said to me. Like, oh man, my dog's dead.
The movie said to me.
I mean, it's like I said, a 2-minute trailer could summarize the entire plot of this.
Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The son pissed me off.
And you know what? That was completely fine with me.
Yeah.
It worked, and it was part of their goal, and it was part of the writing style, and they made the movie's plot like John Wick's mind, where it's very focused. He picks like a destination and he just goes toward it, destroying everything in his path. And that's kind of what this movie was.
There's a singular
focus to get you from the beginning to the end.
I agree. He destroyed everything in his path, even innocent things.
I just want to give like a little quick comparison, because I compared this movie to like a Taken. Taken was released on January 30th, and this is the original. I think that was around Super Bowl weekend time. Mm-hmm. But that movie made $24 million right out of the gate. So that's $10 million more than John Wick. And it went on for a domestic box office gross of $145 million. Now, I don't think John Wick is going to make $145 million.
I also think that Taken's a better movie.
I agree. But this movie is fun enough. I think audiences are really liking this movie. Sure. I think it's gotten like an A-. Oh, no, actually, I think it got a B.
So on Rotten Tomatoes, we got an 86% and an audience score of 85, which is interesting because usually I feel like the audience score is way higher.
It did get on CinemaScore, it got a B. Huh. But it got an 86% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is good. Again, this movie's not going to make 100 mil. Where Taken had that room to breathe. And I think that had Lionsgate given this movie a little time to massage the marketing. Yeah. Because again, somebody was like, oh, I want to see John Wick. I'm like, who the hell's John Wick? I'm like, at least I knew who Jack Reacher was.
Yeah.
Or Jack Ryan when they made that movie, even though Ryan didn't do that great. But I was like, what's John Wick ever done for me in my life? Like, who is he?
If you look at the individual week that John Wick opened, I think it's fine. But if you're talking about Room to Breathe, it has nothing.
Well, but that's why I say you're right.
There's so much coming out.
Yeah, I just think I'm not looking at a release schedule for January and February. I don't know whether contractually they needed to get this movie out by the end of the year. I have no idea.
Right. There's so many things we don't know, but I do agree in theory.
Yeah. Had they given a January, because when you're in January, you sort of kind of, by that time, you've seen most of the Academy contenders, you've seen the action movies, you've seen the Hunger Games. You're looking for something after the holidays to sort of kind of, like, escape from. Like, this would have been a perfect movie for a January, February release. And again, it could have given their they could have used the whole entire holiday season to trailer, to get more posters up, to get a little more advertising on, and maybe they would have done a little bit better than number two. I thought it was bold of them to come out against a PG-13 horror movie, even though that movie got eviscerated. But they did a good job marketing that to the crowd that was going to come in. I don't know. I just think that maybe that date wasn't the best for them.
Can we talk a little bit about the acting, guys?
Sure.
Can I move yeah. on to that? Is that cool?
No.
So,
only if you who's specifically dance.
For me? And one of the reasons why I brought Boondock Saints was because of Willem Dafoe.
Yeah. Absolutely.
He really just wanted to segue, and then we cut him off.
I just think, in comparison, I think Boondock Saints is unbelievable. I love that movie, so it's just tough comparison for me because this isn't.
I don't understand how you don't love this movie.
I think it's awesome. I said that. I think that it's awesome. Right. I really
well, for different
reasons. For totally different reasons. But just one of my, I guess, another issue that I had a little bit, even though I thought that he did a really great job. So coming over, Sarah, you're the same way. I don't know about you guys. Coming over from Game of Thrones, watching Alfie Allen, he missed the mark a little bit for me, especially because I couldn't understand his accent. I didn't know what it was. Like, at first I was like, oh, does he have a New York accent? Does he have a Russian accent? Is that his British accent? Like, what? I don't know. It was kind of weird. I don't know if you had the same problem.
Maybe it's because my expectations are so high of him because right. I love so him in Game of Thrones. Well, he's done an amazing job in his role.
He's
Game of Thrones.
Unbelievable on that show.
And in this one, it was also because he was playing this kid who was just, in his own way, very weak and very spoiled.
For lack of a better word, a shithead.
Yeah. So you don't like him. No. Anyway,
but you don't like him on Game of Thrones, really. Or maybe you feel bad.
But
he
just seemed very. I'm forgetting the word, but when he's in the bath and he feels so out of control, he's like, "Get me more champagne!" I said. Yeah. He just wants something to hold on to feel like he's the big man.
He wants to be the big man, and I get that. He kind of brought my mood down every time he was on the screen, but I think it was just because I was like, "You're obnoxious and annoying, and I can't stand you."
That's him.
What he was supposed to be. I think anybody could have played it. I don't hold it against him.
I thought
I didn't
think it was a character thing. I thought it was an actor thing. Yeah, and really? I didn't think he was fine for the role.
Yeah, I thought he was fine.
No, sorry. I thought he was fine for the role. I don't think he was the best person for the role.
Yeah, I think almost anybody could have done it to play the annoying, obnoxious, unknowing, you know.
Who just
kid
kind of
who
gets
feels he deserves everything, from you know? Skin.
Yeah. Did you guys not have a problem with his voice at all?
I agree for a little bit, I was trying to understand his accent. I didn't know
what it was.
I didn't even need to understand him. That's
No. I'm saying that it wasn't consistent.
Yeah. I don't mean that I couldn't hear the words coming out of his mouth. I meant that I was like, what is that? Is it a combination of things?
He's Russian.
No. But his scenes, his like, there were some scenes where it sounded like very. Just American, and then it would go like to Russian. There, I agree that there was inconsistencies in his vocal work. I agree with that.
Okay, so yeah.
I mean, for me, the cast was fine. You know, the only one that really stuck out to me was
Miss Perkins.
No, well, I want to talk about Adrian Palicki in a little bit, but was Dean Winters, who's I just remember him as Mayhem in those insurance commercials, and he's also in
you know,
my gosh, absolutely.
And he
just
was also
clicked.
In a Hellraiser movie as well. But
I always remember those commercials, and the second he came on screen, I was like,
"Hey, that's Mayhem."
It was another giggle for me. Yeah. It was another moment. that's
and
unfortunate.
Tina Fey's boyfriend too, and.
In what?
And that's 30 Rock.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's true. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. So I'm like, it was fun to see. I was like, oh, that's Mayhem.
Yeah.
He's going to cause mayhem in this movie.
Yeah, I thought he was good. Yeah, I thought he was totally perfectly good. It's not like he had that much room to play.
Yeah, nobody did, really. Yeah. I mean, let's face it.
There wasn't any huge arcs going on for anybody.
No. Even John Wick didn't arc.
Right. No.
No, not really.
No.
But he did
transform.
He got
a different dog. He got a different dog.
like almost at the end, in the third act, we did get a transformation. I can't remember exactly
what did he transform into?
When he's sitting there in the chair, and he gets, like, this, like, monster voice, and he's like, they keep asking me if I'm coming back. And he's like, I'm back. And he's like,
I think it looks like I'm back.
I think I'm
and he's
back.
Like, and he's like growling at them.
No,
there's
I mean,
a little bit of a shift there.
It, I don't know if it's an arc. It was a 0 to 60 kind of moment.
That's what I'm saying. It was a flip.
When his dog gets killed, that was the first 0 to 60. I mean, sure, if you want to try to argue maybe that he, it's more of like a peak than a, arc, but whatever, that's fine.
Rush of adrenaline.
As John Comfort would say, there is no arc to John Wick.
The
only other person that I would say maybe had an arc, although I you wouldn't even call it that, you would just say took us for a ride and we were confused about who he was for a second, was William Dafoe's character, mm-hmm. who we thought was after him and really is on his team, so I don't
that's
know.
That's not
maybe,
an arc, that's
yeah,
just...
Yeah, but maybe he actually was going the other way for a second and then he changed his mind. I don't think he actually did that, but I think somebody could argue
if
that
an
he did.
Arc, if by arc you mean transformation, then yes, everybody who died arced.
They transformed from life to dead.
I didn't...
And I liked Willem Dafoe. I liked seeing Willem Dafoe somewhere, in this...
Yeah, Willem Dafoe is always talented on screen.
Michael Nyquist, I believe is how you pronounce his name. Now, I've been a fan of this guy.
How do you say it? I can't get it.
I believe it's Nyquist. And if you haven't seen it, I strongly recommend you see the Swedish version of the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series, the three movies. He played Blomqvist, what's her name? Salander. So, and he was great as Blomqvist. And I'll always
that's the
him.
Daniel Craig character.
The Daniel Craig in the David Fincher movie, right?
Got it.
So that's what I always see him as. It's interesting, to see him. It seems like the roles that he's played as coming into the States is he's always a villain in one
he
way.
He enjoys
form.
That.
Yeah.
In an interview, he mentioned that he was like. He played Romeo and Romeo and Juliet and found it so boring, and then he played Mercutio and just had so much fun.
So much fun, yeah.
And that's cool. I like when you know yourself as an actor.
He was just
what
like
you
he
enjoy.
Just he just enjoys.
Yeah, he was a villain. He was a villain in a Bond movie.
I liked his chemistry with Keanu Reeves. I thought that it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
The back and forth. Mm-hmm. I thought that they matched well together.
Yeah, and there was you could tell that there was sort of. For the characters had some
history.
Semblance of a history and
totally.
A maybe a respect. Keanu Reeves was fine. Now, Adrian Palicki, I'm going to do something. I'm going to do a 6 degrees of separation between this movie and Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Cool.
Now, Adrian Palicki, the television show. Now, she is now in, I believe she's a regular in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Big fan of. Now,
big fan of her or the show?
Of the show. And now I'm becoming a fan of her. She was, I think that there was a raw deal going on because there was much made that she was Wonder Woman. And then there was much ado made about her being Wonder Woman, about her costume and all this stuff. And this is the David E. Kelly Wonder Woman television show. And they made the pilot. And then it just never went to series, period. Mm-hmm. So all that buzz got killed. She got a ton of press for like 5 minutes and then was more or less gone. So I'm glad to see that she's working. Now, in John Wick, there is a scene, we were talking about it, where she was handcuffed.
Before she pops her thumb out?
Yeah, where she pops her thumb out. Okay. Mm-hmm. So she pops her thumb out and, she gets free of the handcuffs. So the other night I'm watching Marvel's Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., and they have this character, Ward, who's in there, and he's handcuffed, and then he pops his thumb out. I'm like going, where did I just see this? I said, Adrian Palicki just did that in John Wick. I'm going, wait, and she's in this show, too. I wonder if that was her idea. It was because he popped his thumb out to get out of his handcuffs.
I bet that was filmed post,
I'm sure
but yeah.
It was just one of those weird... like coincidences, and I was like, "Yeah, that's funny." And
that
then she's
is.
In both of them.
I think she's awesome.
She's great.
I loved Friday Night Lights. Obviously, I'm a huge TV junkie. I think she's really cool, and
she's
I think
good.
She's unique looking
Absolutely.
And beautiful. And she's got that cool like birthmark or whatever. I just think that she was pretty badass in this too. And then I was happy. This sounds mean, but I was happy to see her get murdered.
Well, see,
she messed up the rules.
Well, she messed up the rules, but I was like, going, really, you're gonna show up to that? Like,
yeah.
You're smarter than that, aren't you? Like, if the guy from the hotel is calling you and saying, you need to be somewhere, you know that you broke the rules and you willingly did it. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to show
up.
He
probably offered her money. She was for hire. Yeah. Always. But I thought she did a good job.
Yeah, I thought she was good, too. And John Leguizamo, Mm-hmm. I actually thought we were going to see more of him in the movie.
I thought so too.
It was fine, and we already talked about Lance Reddick as the
who I thought we were going to see more of in the movie.
And who's the gentleman? The gentleman that played. I swear, the gentleman that played the cleanup guy. Okay, I swear he was Scorpion in Dirty Harry. I'm willing to bet. No. David Kelly, I think, is his name.
David Patrick Kelly.
No, he wasn't. He was in Dreamscape. I remember him in Dreamscape as being a villain. He's been in a ton of movies.
I remember during the movie thinking, like, oh, my God, this guy, how do I know him? And then I realized it was from Gossip Girl. But
oh, okay. See, he was also in Last Man Standing with Bruce Willis.
Yeah. But you know me. Sarah, Gossip Girl, throwback. but he was great. I thought we were going to see a little more of him, too. Every time he came in, you knew exactly what he was here there for. Yeah. So that was cool.
Yeah. I liked how they cleaned up his house.
Yeah.
For any wrestling fans, Kevin Nash was in the movie.
Who was he?
He was the Club Red background bouncer. Francis.
Cool. A lot of fun little Easter eggs in there, then.
It was in the movie.
Okay.
So, Roxy pulled out her phone, not just to always text, but also to Shazam some songs. Is that why you did that, or is that not why you did it?
During the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed the soundtrack. I thought it was cool. I liked the song we just opened with. I'm kind of rocking to it. I had no problems with it.
I liked that it was... the music was very different, and it felt right. Because you could see it being more orchestrated and things like that. This was more electronic type stuff.
There's a lot of times that, like, score or soundtrack, like, I feel like enhances the mood, but it kind of flies over my head. This movie... Multiple times, I found myself like tapping my foot or like hitting my leg because it was like action packed and there was a really strong beat. And sometimes they would make these cuts where, like, I think it was at the end of the house fighting scene or on the last hill right before the doorbell rings. It just kind of like it goes from this really loud music just to like there's like two beats and it just cuts and it gets in, goes mm-hmm. to silence. And so it was, like, constantly, it was one of those films where the soundtrack was getting me amped up. I was tapping along. I was, like, kind of rocking out, and I liked how they used it.
And see, for me, there was just one scene where I felt they went overboard on. And that was a scene where where Wick walks into sort of kind of that speakeasy-ish lounge. Mm-hmm. And they had, apparently they looked like jazz type, they were jazz-type musicians on stage with a vocalist. Mm-hmm. And whatever was going on, I felt I wanted to hear that because I thought that would have been a perfect juxtapositioning for the action that was going to happen other than the hardcore beat. That was just my one... Because as I'm watching it and I'm seeing this vocalist like belt out this
and you're
jazz
wanting
cover,
to know what
and
she's
I'm like
saying.
Going well it wasn't just that I just thought that it would have been better to if you're in a nightclub and you have just don't play your score music over the music that's already taking place.
But there's practical music. Use the practical music.
Yeah, use the practical music.
Diegetic, as they say.
I like that word.
Mm-hmm. It's date. I mean, that's the word to use. Know,
I have to go back to David Patrick Kelly. He was also in 48 Hours. That's the movie.
But also Luther. Gossip Girl.
He was in Gossip Girl.
Primarily in Gossip Girl. That's what he's really known for.
He was Luther. Luther. Card door looked awful painful.
I have to say, guys, I just find this funny. I wonder if you guys, too. I'm on IMDb right now, and I'm looking at frequently asked questions for John Wick, and there's only one, and it's, what's the big deal about his dog? Many people ask.
See, well, and that's funny, because we brought that up.
And I've heard that.
Here's the thing.
It was a cute dog.
It was so cute.
I wanted to get a beagle.
Here's the problem. People who like dogs, and they really like dogs, like, I know my friend Stefan. Mm-hmm. You know, Stefan, he took his date and she was crying because she just loves dogs. So if you love dogs, you will have that instant connection and any harm to a dog, even though obviously it's not actual harm to a dog in real life. you're going to get emotional for. If you don't really care about dogs, yes, you will think, well, what's the big deal?
I don't know. I mean, he took vendetta against, like, all of Mother Russia, it seemed, because of this. And I get it. It was, again, I said this from the start. It's an efficient movie. I just wish he'd had it more than a day and a half.
It was his hope.
Yeah.
I thought it was totally appropriate.
Yeah, and they took his car. Yeah. His hope.
Listen,
here's the thing. They got back in. He didn't want to. He had a life. He had his things.
I get it.
And they went into his world and they messed with him.
Yeah, no,
they beat him up. They kicked his dog.
From his wife. This is what the person, I think they describe it perfectly on here, BJ Cool, says, the thing you have to realize is that the dog was a gift from his wife to give him something to love to keep him grounded. Psychologically, he was grieving for his wife by loving the dog. When his dog dies, it's like his wife dying all over again. He couldn't save her or blame anyone for her death, but he could for his dog.
Listen, I'm not...
Yeah!
I'm not disagreeing with anything that you're saying. I'm just saying, if you want to be nitpicky, that's one thing you can be nitpicky. It didn't bother me. It wasn't like, ugh, there's not enough. Because you go along for the ride in this movie.
You know what?
You're not looking
tell John Wick that you didn't like that he got all upset that his dog.
Well, we already saw
what happened. One to the head.
Oh, would you just go interpretive dance?
All right.
So,
gets out of...
No, and again, I think the approach in filmmaking on this movie... was worked great. I think for what this movie is, it's a B action movie. I mean, are we in agreement on this? Like, this isn't. I think this is a B action movie.
I
much
just
the way
have
Taken
to call
was,
it a comedy. You know? I can't help it.
Okay, but can you agree that there's action?
I agree. It's B. I agree.
It's okay. Like a Luc Besson.
I agree.
Like when he was on his game, and I'm telling you, Luc Besson should hire these two guys to direct this movie, because I think they're far better directors than the people that he's choosing to direct.
I am curious. I'm curious, though, back to something you said earlier. If this had been that they stuck with a 65 to 70 year old man,
mm-hmm.
who do you guys think would have been cast or could have been cast?
He cast Newman while he was writing it, but obviously that wasn't going to work out.
Newman?
Dead.
Who's, Paul Newman?
Yeah, who he had in mind while he was writing. The writer, oftentimes, he says that he pictures older actors from, like, black and white movies as who he is writing for. So he doesn't really write with current actors in mind. And so he had Paul Newman
in
mind. That's obviously...
He said that for all the roles he was thinking, he always thinks of dead people, which is unfortunate for him because...
They're never going to
really
play him.
For casting. But I mean, who alive do you think could have?
I was thinking about that on my way over here. So
I knew you were. I thought I'd set you up for it then.
I was driving on, and I was thinking this, it could have been a Bruce Willis. A Harrison Ford, I think, could have been, because he's 70, and but he's still fit and in shape. And, if Harrison Ford... career was really, really in the toilet, which he sort of kind of has a revival right now. He might have considered something like this. Bruce Willis, he already had Red, so he wouldn't have taken it. But I was thinking of people like even a Gary Oldman. But you need somebody who's physically, like, I wouldn't like to
you
see
Schwarzenegger. You need someone who you just really believe is going to actually love the dog.
Well, and be able to handle the action. So...
What about, he's older, but like a Clint Eastwood. What do we think about that?
I think
he's too old, I think.
Too old?
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, just in general, I mean, you could do a hypothetical, could he have done it or not? He just has too much going on his own.
Oh.
So,
fair enough.
Yeah. No,
I'm not producing, directing, and starring in it. Can't do it.
Yeah, no, but, I just think that the action would have been, like, even this could have been a good vehicle for Kevin Costner. As well, we got Pierce Brosnan in November Man. So, but it would have been a completely different Kurt Russell.
Thank you, JT.
Kurt Russell would have been perfect for this role. Mm. But I also think that the action would have been filmed differently. It wouldn't have been as bornish and hand to hand, only because. Look, I know these guys are fit, but the limitation. Of the physicality. I mean, this is a very physical movie. Mm-hmm. And Keanu apparently did 90% of his stunts from fighting to driving. Well, even the director said, and Adrian Palicki had said, oh my God, he could take so much abuse.
I think he's badass.
It was crazy. Yeah.
I think he's awesome. And I think sometimes, you just can't watch an actor hold a gun. You're like, don't believe that. There's not a second that he's holding that gun. You're like, that doesn't seem right.
Actually, do you Kurt think Russell would have been perfect if you were going to go for that? Because he could be very badass, and I think he could be sympathetic that if his dog died.
Can we, just out of curiosity, not that this has any merit whatsoever, because Carrie Ann Moss did so well with the driving in The Matrix, and he didn't really get the drive in The Matrix, you think this was his, like, you know what, I want to do some driving?
I don't think, I think this was more like a, I need to get a paycheck kind of thing.
Yeah, but you didn't have to do that many of your own stunts to get that paycheck.
I think he just likes doing stunts. Yeah,
I think if he just wanted to do a paycheck, he'd be like, all right, what's the minimal amount of work that you guys need me to do?
No, I mean in terms of signing on to a movie that he knew that this was part of the deal for. I just think that some actors like to do things themselves, you know, and it definitely makes the editing process easier. And you don't need to worry about whether you're seeing a face or not, whatever it is. So
Here's what I like. Keanu,
too, that's great.
Keanu off screen really gets behind the creative process.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you watch all of his behind the scenes interviews and things like that, he's quite a passionate man.
I just lost it when G Baby died. That's my Hardball reference. Okay.
Well, the other thing we haven't really talked about, the other thing that this movie used very economically was special effects shots. I mean, I'm sure they were in there, but it didn't rely on them it didn't seem to rely on them a lot for our action sequences.
Yeah.
Like, they actually seemed to be choreographed out and in a way that they didn't have to digitally enhance somebody flying through a wall or...
And I think they used lighting well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Obviously, the more light you have, the worse it becomes to take stuff out.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, Phil, you're the one who told us that it was a $20,000 budget or something, right? Did I get
it right? Not 20,000.
Sorry. No,
20 million.
20 million, sorry. 20 million budget.
I would love that if this movie was made for 20,000. Find me these directors. I'm hiring them right now.
Sorry, 20 million, 20 to 25 million dollar budget. I think you said that. So they had to be economical with the lighting and who they used for stunts, whatever it is.
Yeah.
They didn't really have a choice.
And being that, again, the familiarity that Reeves had with these guys as stunt coordinators, it was easy for them to work with him because they could work out what they wanted for a shot. I also thought the movie was edited well. This Elisabeth Rolostater. I probably just butchered her name.
Sure.
But I mean, she worked on like Contraband, and so she's worked on some movies similar to this. Like Contraband, I would put as sort of kind of outside of Mark Wahlberg. It's sort of a B action movie. The movie was very well paced for me. I didn't look at my watch, you know, in the 98 minutes that it was runtime. And when it was done, I was like, oh, okay, that was fine. My only, if I'm going to compare it to Taken had a much more emotional tether to it because it was this guy's daughter that was kidnapped, and for him being the bodyguard to this singer at the time, you know, his daughter's being kidnapped by these, I think they're Russian again too, these Russian thugs or Ukrainian thugs, you know, there was a little bit more of an emotional tether set up for Taken. You know, this movie for me, just like we see the wife, he had this life. Doug gets killed. We're off to the races.
Yeah,
it was pretty quick.
I mean, I'm just gonna task any filmmaker who's listening out there, make a revenge movie with a female character. You want to make a different movie?
They tried. It was called Columbiana.
Yeah, we'll make it better.
Make it better.
What do we think is next for?
There's a TV show, Revenge.
And we cover it. Hell yeah, Sunday
After
night.
Buzz TV.
Thanks. That's a Phil Roxy show. What do you guys think is next for Keanu Reeves' career then? I'm looking at what he's got slated on IMDb. Nothing that I seem to be that familiar with. What kind of movie could you guys see him doing next?
Well, I mean, Bill and Ted 3 is always being rumored that it's going to happen. And he'll probably do another action movie at some point, similar to this. I mean, he seems to like this, and so long as people... Mm-hmm.
Are receptive
to him, you know, and I don't know if he's going to have a cameo in the Point Break reboot, whatever the hell it is.
There's also been talk of Speed in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Who knows? But more importantly, Rox, what about the directors? I mean, we've kind of talked about what they could get into, but what, I mean,
why Rox? Why Rox were not the directors?
You posed the question. I'm only going along with it.
Oh, you mean where they can go next?
Yeah.
You know, like, I think this is clearly their forte, action. And that's not to say that they can't do other things, because I hate pigeonholing people based off of one event. But it seems like from the things that they have AD'd and worked on in the past, that they really like to do action. More movies like this until they get to do movies like Equalizer.
I would love to see him do that Neil Gaiman book about London above ground and underworld.
Mm-hmm.
I think this, you know, I don't know who. I only say that because obviously it's a pre-existing entity. I'm not going to make up one for them right now.
Right? Why not? You should write something for them.
Revenge movie, sure. Clint Eastwood, John Wick get together.
I think that in their next movie they have to, you know. Can never kill less people, so I think they shot between 82 and 95 people in this film. So next movie, I don't know, 150 body count.
Sounds like a war movie.
Which, by the way, on a separate note, the fact of adding in more every kind of sequence is there was a big article, I forget where it is, but just in superhero movies in general, how that's not always a good thing. So, just a heads up.
What was that?
I was coming up with my theory. I think war movie. There you go. They're great at that.
What are the name of the brothers that did...
Wachowski brothers.
Not the Wachowski brothers. They did that Johnny Depp movie based off of a graphic novel.
Oh, the Coen... No,
not the Coen brothers.
Oh, they did that.
I'm trying to look up Johnny Depp.
What's the movie?
It was
the
movie JT, what do you got from the booth over there?
The Johnny Depp movie based off of a graphic novel, and it was two brothers that directed it. I could see them sort of kind of going
Johnny Depp film?
Yeah.
Well, one thing I can give you...
He played the private investigator. It was Jack the Ripper. From Hell. From Hell.
From the Hughes brothers.
The Hughes brothers. Thank you very much.
Thank you, JT. I knew I could get it out of you.
Also, real quick, Keanu Reeves just signed on to star in a sci-fi action film called Replicas.
Good job, JTE,
coming up for us in the clutch.
Thank you.
So I see them. They could potentially go down like the Hughes brothers route. I mean, they have a visual style. They may not use slow mo like the Hughes brothers, and they may not be as artsy fartsy. But in an action movie like this, for me, I just wanted to move. And I think we've seen better action movies, because again, the other movie I was thinking about was Nonstop, which we've done. Nonstop, I thought, was a better movie, too. But this movie was just fun. Like, there was nothing...
But Nonstop, you kind of just had to turn your brain off. This one...
This movie you did, too.
Yes, totally. But you could get sucked in visually and through the artifice of, like, the music and the poetry of the shots. There was a difference to me.
Okay. So. Seems like we all enjoyed it a thorough amount, though.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't suck. It didn't make me angry.
It didn't make you angry. I love when movies don't make you angry.
Yeah, you know what? You put that on too many movie posters. You got to get a better quote. It didn't suck. Dimitri Panos.
It didn't suck. Yeah, I mean, it's not that I didn't hate this movie. Like I said, I found it to be a very efficient action movie. It was in, it was out. It told a very simple story. It was directed really well, paced very well. I didn't have a problem with the acting. You know,
Sarah Stratton, last thoughts.
Really enjoyed this movie. Loved the combination of just very fluid action. There was a puppy, and it made me laugh. So I was thoroughly enjoyed it.
And Roxy Stride, dare I ask, last thoughts?
Oh, no, it was good. I thought it was funny. It was good. I'm kind of surprised how much Sarah liked it, but that's how I feel.
All right. And, of course, you know my thoughts. You know what? Hate me or love me, this was one of my... You guys should see my top list for 2014, because this is definitely on there. I don't know why. I was just gonna...
Top 10 or top?
Top movies of 2014. Well, I don't have a top 10.
We'll come up with the top list in December for each of us.
Indeed. Thank you guys for listening as always. For more Interpretive Dance by Roxy Stryer, follow her on Twitter and Instagram at Roxy Stryer. Sarah Stratton can be found on Box Office Breakdown every Monday. So definitely check that out. And Dimitri Panos, you still have a Twitter.
I still have a Twitter, and every now and then I check it. Hey, JT was one of my biggest fans yesterday. We were
what's the handle?
At D Movies, as opposed to B Movies. So it's at D Movies 1701.
There you go.
And happy Halloween, everybody.
All right.
All treats with this panel.
thank you guys for listening. We'll be back for another movie very soon and more interpretive dance. Broxy Stryer, JT, why do you keep turning off the music? Keep messing with me.
Keep
messing.
We'll
dance? See you here next time.
It's a dance.
Bye.
Part of the dance.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.